Hey, what's going on? Greetings and good day, and welcome to Birds All Night, episode number 207. My name is Drew Fairservice. His name is Andrew Stoughton, and we are here talking about your Toronto Blue Jays 1 week into the regular season. And let me tell you, it's all that we dreamed of. It's all that we could ever hope to be. Now, I already said his name, so he's joining me as always.
Yeah, that was weird. Old Reliable.
Old Reliable, Mr. Andrew Stoughton, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
You're doing all right. 1 week into the season. Are you already sick to death of it or what?
No, I don't think so yet. No, I think it's going to be interesting.
There's already, I think we thought that it was going to be like a real sleepwalk of a rebuilding year, evaluating different players, who's in and who's not in. But there's been this really exciting tension in the season so far, and it's, will they ever get a hit? I think you can't put a price tag on that kind of, will they, won't they? Oh my gosh, it's just like a real Ross and Rachel situation. Oh, you never know, these two crazy kids are going to get together. Blue Jays on offense. It's been a week. The offense looks like shit. The pitching looks great because they played two just brutally terrible teams. But it's all very exciting. And beyond the fact that they've been playing games that matter for the first time, that they had a big thing at the home opener and all the other stuff, more to the point, the most important thing, the thing that we really log on, the thing that we fire up Skype and plug in our USB microphones, transactions, baby. Oh, the transactions have been coming in fast and furious. Last week, when we recorded what ended up being our season preview episode, the Blue Jays had, just made the Kendrys Morales trade, which, because of the internet, seems like it was 100 years ago, even though it was like a week. And now they played a bunch of games, and they've made another series of transactions, call-ups, demotions, and trades. None more notable, of course, than the Kevin Pillar trade. The Blue Jays shipping Kevin Pillar to the San Francisco Giants, which was one of those deals that was a logical fit from the start and was kind of heavily rumored. And then, lo, it came to be. The Blue Jays, of course, received in return for Kevin Pillar 3 warm bodies. Not bad. Not bad at all. Alan Hansen, kind of a utility guy, infielder sort of person. Derek Law, Keith Law's large adult son. And another guy who is a prospect-y type. De Leon, is that his last name?
No, it's not.
It's not. What's the prospect name?
Jose DePaula.
DePaula. Yeah, so I was in the same. I was in the right neighborhood.
I mean, yeah, yeah. Good luck. Good luck with that. I'm double checking that I'm in the right neighborhood too, to be honest with you. But it's not De Leon. Either way, yes, you're absolutely right. Warm bodies. Which is actually kind of an incredible thing to get in return for Kevin Pillar in the year 2019, in the first week of April, in a weird trade at a time when trades never happen. But since baseball's broken, I guess that's what we do now.
Yeah, when two bad teams can get together and consummate a trade in barely April, then it's a good sign of health, a nice barometer for the state of the game. So Pillar, of course, fits into the Giants' plans because they needed warm bodies themselves. Their outfield, pitiful, just a truly dire experience in San Francisco.
It is, by the way, Juan DePaula. So we were both wrong, perhaps equally, but I'm going to say you were more wrong than I was.
I don't think that's unfair to say I was more wrong. I'm happy to admit when I am more wrong than usual. Pillar, of course, now in the aftermath, there was a series of, reflections upon Kevin Pillar's tenure, about the way that he conducted himself, the way that he was a real gamer out there playing every day, his sort of, 32nd round draft pick signed for $1,000. I guess he used his entire signing bonus to buy a new iPhone. And then lo and behold, he's like, beloved beloved, now former Blue Jay, a guy who did a job and played, you know, seven seasons. He was the longest tenured Blue Jay before he was traded. And let me tell you, the reaction to the Pillar trade was even more than I expected from, like, the not traditional baseball audiences. People real mad about that one. Real mad about Kevin Pillar getting traded.
Did you find that?
Yes.
Actually, I think I have successfully, like, muted and blocked most of those people. I think actually currently at any given time, I think there's probably only about 500 people who are still currently using Twitter. And so it actually turns out that it's really easy to mute and block things that you don't want to hear, such as, oh my God, Shatkins traded Kevin Pillar.
See, that is the side of the trade that I did not personally see. I'm sure that happened. I'm sure that there are those folks out there who are so determined to kill the front office that any transaction that they make, any move, is a negative one. It's the wrong one. They can't win for losing in the eyes of many. Where I saw a very strong reaction was not among what you would call Blue Jays fans. It was definitely not on Twitter, where my heavily curated and wonderful thank you to all the people that I follow and engage with on Twitter for making that experience as positive as you do.
Yes.
It was on Facebook, actually.
Mm.
And it was on Facebook, number one, with people who are not obvious baseball fans. People who are maybe more of like a wine aunt kind of vibe. That, like, you know, some of my wife's best friends and a woman who's maybe 15 or 20 years older than me who I used to work with. And then those are the people at work, people who I'd never talked to about baseball before. And they were like, oh my God, this trade, what's going on? Just really upset. People are hurt. They loved Kevin Pillar. And you get it, right? It's the catches are spectacular. And that's what I said the day the trade was announced. And it's something that I definitely think that I've come around on. And I think I've been trying to, in particular on this show, while not burying him, I can finally lay down my shovel, but also acknowledging that he has, beyond the kind of cold, ghoulish reason and the rosterpatory desire to improve upon his production, he has, through his play and through his demeanor, especially from those who are eager to overlook the suspension and the comments that led to that suspension, a beloved member of the Blue Jays, people who love the way that he went about his business. So those folks are mad at the team, never going to spend my money on the team anymore, that sort of stuff, which, you know, is inevitable. And that you saw Atkins sort of address that aspect of the trade, probably more than I expected, with like, yeah, it's never going to be popular. We're not trying to win popularity contests. We're trying to win baseball games. And but yeah, that was the reaction I saw. It was strong. It was a very strong outward display of affection towards Kevin Pillar.
Yeah. See, I don't use Facebook anymore, so that doesn't surprise me. I actually did in my, you know, real life have people be like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Somebody wants to talk to you about the Kevin Pillar trade. And it the person they were referring to may or may not have resembled the wine mom description you gave earlier. I think it's smart of Atkins to, you know, not to be the great defender of these people. But it's smart probably to talk past the people like us who understand why they're doing it, and the people who are listening to this and everybody who follows the team and follows the industry and follows the game, who all understand why this is a move that they're going to do, and to talk about it in terms of like the popularity contest, because, you know, that, you know, nobody here gives a shit about that, I don't think, right? I mean, I think everybody understands that that's I can't call it a great move, because I don't know what they've gotten back. I don't know what the other opportunities were, but he was a guy who was just a spare part at this point, despite the fact that he had a much more prominent role. Though that is, that's not without, without meaning. And that, that's, and I think that connects to what you saw on Facebook and shit, because did you see some of like Lindsay Adler's tweets earlier today here on Thursday, just about talking to somebody whose kid was like watching like Swing Mechanics videos and like, mm-hmm. and like just, and I think if you followed some of that thread, there is also somebody talking about, I think she said that the kid was like a baby when the Giants won the first World Series and 2 and 4, and is a huge Buster Posey fan. And like, it just like, it, like in a deep way, it means something to this, you know, this little person, which is a thing that, you know, that's what Kevin Pillard means to, I think, a lot of people in Toronto who, you could, casual fans is kind of like a pejorative, but like, you know, people who were like, wanted to be interested in baseball, and it, this is a very, it's as visible a role player as you'll find, I think. Right. And like you say, the legacy is complicated. The at bats were sometimes ugly, but yeah, he's a guy who's going to come back in 10 years, when his career's over, and get a standing ovation like John McDonald did, or like a lot of other, guys who just really, just added to the character of what the team is and what the whole goddamn thing is about, this sport that we all watch. And yet, I say that, still a lot of people who will not be as forgiving, I think, because that was an ugly incident, and that's, well, of course, has to be acknowledged at least. You know,
that's the thing that I saw on Twitter more than anything, was like, good riddance at people who, from people who are, have not and would not simply just let that go, which is entirely their prerogative, and something that the day to day kind of grind of baseball and how just the time marching on makes it harder to hang on to that. It's so easy to forget. It's so easy to just let, whatever that happened in the past, and he was contrite, even though he wasn't, years later when there was somebody who was doing like a bit of an image rehab on his behalf. But
it's easy for say us to, not understand the experiences of people that would, look at that,
of course,
in a way where they're not, not able to forgive it in the same way. And that's, the thing we should listen to.
I used the word tension earlier, and that's the sort of tension that people who are maybe listening to this show and also producing it have, that tension where we can talk. We're talking about the team in a baseball sense, and we talk about Kevin Pillar as a baseball player and as a asset, and all the different ways that he fits into the baseball.
Weird thing, yeah.
But like, also, is that something that we are then to bring up every time? Every time we talk about Kevin Pillar, is it going to color our feelings about him? Is it going to color the way that we provide analysis of such as we do? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I don't think that it's
we can do it. We can do it every time he gets traded, though, right? I think.
Yeah, that's true.
So, this is the week where it's like, here's Kevin Pillar's legacy in Toronto kind of piece.
Absolutely. That's true.
Which I haven't yet.
I will say that you are absolutely right in evoking the name of John McDonald. I think he does occupy that same sort of beloved space, and it's not the sort of, everyone loves to talk about, Toronto loves underdogs and the kind of lunch pail guys. And I don't know that it's necessarily, I don't know that I buy that especially. John McDonald, the difference between John McDonald is not just that we like him more than Pillar. Because they do.
Clearly. I mean, I understand that people like Pillar in a maybe a similar way, but yeah, I don't feel that. Maybe that's age, or maybe it's, but I doubt it. I don't know. I don't feel that. But.
Our experience, yours and my experience is very similar in that John McDonald was around when we were just like there at the games all the time for no particular reason, because we were, you and I at that time were in our 20s or so, and it was just kind of like, John McDonald's a distraction from a bad team, where Kevin Pillar sort of has that, he got some shine from the fact that the team was good, and he was an integral part of a good team, which is nice. And so that's a nice combination in terms of being able to maintain that fuzzy space in the minds of so many fans, because A, associating with good teams, B, associating with good memories and great catches and all that cool stuff. And the catch that he made in game 5 of the ALDS, where that there was like a track, you could see the smear on the diving, sliding, catching it, stayed there. People will always remember that stuff. And for his faults and for his missteps, he will, you're absolutely right, always be beloved. He'll always be a Blue Jay. He'll always be someone who will come back. Blue Jays fans, those, you know, those aggrieved by the move will have lots of opportunity, I'm sure, when his career is over. His career, which in and of itself is sort of like a bit of an underdog, and is almost like a minor miracle in the baseball sense, given what he came from and his lack of prospect status. And I will say, the ultimate testament to Kevin Pillar is, for how many years we've been trying to bury him on the show, as an example, or just basically begging the team to upgrade on him, which is hard, and how the team every year essentially threw the doors open and said, someone please come and take this job. And they couldn't. Nobody could. No, not none of the outfielders that they've brought in, that they brought up, were able to unseat him, such that it became a point where they just had to trade him in the first week of the season to get him out so they could have that space on the roster. I think
for,
that's
for Socrates to. Brito, obviously.
Well, yes. How grim is that? But anyway, so congratulations, Kevin Pillar, on a what I will describe now as storied Blue Jays career. I'm sure Blue Jays fans all wish you the best of luck in San Francisco. And then as you bounce around as a fourth outfielder looking for work, because you're old now, your career is over, man. Sorry. That's just the economics of the game. They could pay someone nothing. They could. Why would they have you, a guy who can do things, a guy who can evoke feelings from people, when you can have a guy who's out of options and just keep him around just in case? Just in case. So Socrates Brito is the name. Well, I don't remember the details of this trade. This was in the immediate aftermath, I believe, of the Pillar trade.
Yeah, and Brito had been he's out of options. He'd been DFA'd by the Diamondbacks, and the Padres had picked him up. And I think like 3 days later, they tried to sneak him through waivers, and it did not work. I want to say I don't want to fuck up somebody's name again, but I want to say it's like Rodrigo Orozco, some prospect who I am not super familiar with. And I am correct, Rodrigo Orozco, an outfielder. I don't know, the Brito thing, it's interesting. Like he is a fast human being. He hit really well last year in AAA, but it was like his fourth try at it, and I don't know where the Diamondbacks AAA affiliate is off the top of my head, but I'm going to assume it very possibly a hitter's park. And I think his BABIP was like 385, but part of that is his speed, but still that's, you know, that's a little high. But yeah, it's interesting to me. So here's how it's interesting to me. So the Jays are obviously giving him a chance. They're sending Anthony Alford back down to Buffalo just to not have, not just immediately lose Brito. There was Brandon Drury talked about, you know, him. They were teammates at one point in the Diamondbacks organization. I think Shelley Duncan was the coach, the field coordinator, or whatever the fuck his title is, the one of the coaches, came from Arizona and is a big fan of his as well. Or this is at least the spin that the front office and the people, the spokes folks, have been putting on it. And you know, it's interesting in that, one, he comes from Arizona like Drury did, where it's like the Jays maybe have a different valuation of prospects or of players than the Diamondbacks do, and they've made a bunch of trades with the Padres, and they obviously have some, you know, maybe a little different valuation there. They've made a couple trades with the Cardinals as well. And that, probably more than whatever the fuck Socrates burrito is going to be, is maybe the interesting angle by which to approach this transaction. Because it's like, what, you know, what do the Padres see in the guys the Jays are giving them that the Jays don't, and vice versa? I don't know.
That is that's an interesting perspective. I don't know.
It's more interesting than what's Socrates Brito gonna do. He's gonna, you know, try to steal first a bunch and then get fucking DFA'd.
That's true. So I guess the bigger question is, why is that a more important gamble than to let Anthony Alford play in the big leagues every day? That's the thing that I don't understand. Jonah Birnbaum and I went for coffee and stuff yesterday, and we were talking about Dwight Smith Jr., right? Dwight Smith Jr. Mm-hmm. is playing every day for the Orioles, and he looks the part of the guy that everyone, I think, was maybe afraid or wary of. Like, Dwight Smith Jr. is doing exactly what you thought Dwight Smith Jr. could do at the big league level, which is, like, he can put the ball in play. He can probably hit for a decent average with no power and ably play the outfield. And it's like, okay, so that's kind of the book on him. Not a lot of ceiling, but the Orioles are just looking to kind of keep the floor from plummeting through the earth.
Right.
So it's a good fit for them. Maybe that's what the Blue Jays are doing, but why? I just don't see why there's more value in a player. So I guess is the belief then that even though he has never hit in the big leagues, even though Zach Greinke has better offensive numbers big league hitter than Socrates Brito does, is the belief that having such a fast player offers ceiling that evaluating Anthony Alford's ability to play at the big league level is less important? Like the ability to flex Anthony Alford's options and send him down to play in Buffalo on their opening day is more important, is less important than just like, what if Brito can hit suddenly? I don't know. I just don't. I don't get it. It's like the weird sort of like that arbitrage. Yeah. Like just like maybe they can, he can string together 3 months and then they can trade him again. Like,
well, but I think that assumes that he's static, right? Like that he's the, which I think is not what the Jays would think in this scenario, right? Like, I mean, like it reminds me, Billy McKinney is another why. Elvis Luciano is obviously a why. And I don't know, they're obviously big believers in trying to get more out of players than the next organization, right? And that's part of what we've seen in the coaching changes. That's why Dave Hudgens is here. That's why Guillermo Martinez is the hitting coach. You know, he worked with Randall Grichuk, who I'm sure we'll talk about, Hudgens with the Astros, and why they are, you know, developing, you know, their own way of evaluating and looking at players and looking at swing paths and spin rates and all, you know, all this new stuff. I mean, I think it's sort of like a new spin on the old thing where it's like, oh, well, our hitting coach, maybe he'll be able to figure him out. I like that in that way, and like just using him as an experiment to see if they can make changes and, you know, if they've seen something in him that they're like, oh, if he does this, then maybe this will work. But yeah, that's, you know, that's not a really compelling explanation. It's just the why, I don't know.
Is Anthony Alford not a bigger piece of the puzzle than trying to bump these guys up along the margins of the roster? To me, it's a philosophical thing that I am having a hard time wrapping my head around. And I'm glad. I'm glad that you understand.
Alford didn't hit his way out of AAA, though, right? Like, I mean, he had a nice spring training, but, like, he wasn't great last year. Like, I don't know that he needs to.
No, that's true. But, like, at some point, they need to. So then your suggestion is then that Anthony Alford needs to prove that he can hit at the AAA level before giving the opportunity to hit at the big league level?
Couldn't hurt, and I think, you know, yeah, that goes into the calculation along with the fact that he can be optioned and Brito can't, and it's, you know, it's just a you know, weird narrow arbitrage thing about asset management, like you were saying.
It is that, and it, I don't know if off-putting is the word, but it's just, I guess it is a fundamental difference in the way that I have come to understand player development as a person who's not a player development person. So my understanding of that can be based in not any fact and born of ignorance and ignorance alone. So I'm willing to cop to that. But it just seems like, okay, we're going to clear the deck a little bit to give this guy a chance, or these guys a chance to play. It means we're going to give Billy McKinney a chance to play. We're going to give a chance for Randall Gidzik to play some center field, whatever it might be. But then to have this burrito thing sort of like snuck in under the wire and sort of slapped on to that available roster spot is just it's a bit of a head scratcher for me. And it's easy for fans or those of us in the professional journalism media to be on the sidelines and think like, well, the burrito sucks. Like, this is what he is. Why bother? You're wasting everyone's time. It's more entertaining and it's more worthwhile to take a guy that you signed a big bonus to and see what you can get, like throw him into the deep end and let him go. But maybe that isn't the best way to develop players, to build a winning team. But the little micro transactions sort of, that doesn't seem like an especially strong way to build a winning team either. But I'm happy to be proven wrong 5 years from now when they can broadly gesture, be like, all of these pieces matter. The trade tree has many strong branches, and we rest the babes in the boughs of the trade tree when the Blue Jays win 85 games instead of 75 games.
I don't know if it was, I saw somebody talking on Twitter about the Orioles this week. I don't know if it was about not re-signing Adam Jones, but just the idea that, you know, if you just try to put an entertaining product on the field and win, like, you know, 70 games instead of like 45, like the difference is probably, the difference between 70 and 45 is going to be like a marginally better prospect 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is that a worthwhile trade-off for just having a complete dog shit year where nobody gives a fuck and it's just completely pointless and everybody acknowledges it.
Well, now we've gone into a bit of a different debate. Does anyone care that the baseball teams don't care that no one cares? And I believe that David Roth wrote something interesting about this on Deadspin a few weeks back. But it's the Blue Jays, the baseball decision makers, don't necessarily have to include that in their calculus, which comes back to what Ross Atkins was saying about Kevin Pillar, but it's not just about crowd pleasing, but like there is a balance, I think, to strike between doing things for the sake of doing them. Like, there are legitimate baseball reasons, even in the most rudimentary sense, for why you would trade Kevin Pillar. And if it's to open opportunities for the other players that you're trying to establish who they are, what they are, what they can be, if they can be a part of the next good Blue Jays team, if they can be part of at least fielding a quasi-competitive team, at least trying to go out there and win a few games, versus this sort of like really marginal increase in upgrades. But then the other side of that is people talking about the ticket sales. So the ticket sales have not been strong other than the opening day, not just in Toronto, but around the league. But there was someone I saw was interviewing someone who's unnamed, and I won't say their outlet, but they were interviewing Steve Phillips on TV. And it was like, oh, you know, the attendance is really low. Is like the Kevin Pillar trade the reason? Well, no, the Kevin Pillar trade is not the reason. There are 9,000 or 12,000 people that have bought tickets for the third game of the year, because those tickets have been sold for months. There's no walk-up. It's not like people are like, oh, it's April, it's March 31st. Let's wander down to the Rogers Center to watch Kevin Pillar play. That's not the way that it works.
No.
But maybe there's an element of, like, if you piss that person off because, A, the team sucks and could barely score more than a run a game, when it comes down to August and they're like, should we go down to the Jays game? And they're like, no, I don't want to do that. Fuck the Jays. They traded Kevin Pillar and they suck. Those are the things that that they don't have to worry about right now. It doesn't seem like teams don't care if that person comes or goes, or frankly lives or dies. So,
well, it's not that I don't know that it's that they don't have to worry about it, but just in their calculation, they don't have to worry about it. Maybe that is a blind spot that they have. It feels like it on the other side that, like, you know, you're losing something by not engaging and having something, you know, a product that fans care about. It feels like they might be, you know, missing the boat on that, and that is maybe that's the next market inefficiency is actually giving a shit and trying to put a product on the field and trying to, like, you know, in a long-term way. Just even thinking about it, like, it is pretty cavalier how teams have been just disregarding a whole season of play. Like, that's a summer to people. Like, there's a reason that people connect with games and with sports, right? You know, I don't know. Are you trying to be NASCAR? Like, it's not unheard of to have sports just fucking fade away. We've talked about this on here before.
To go away and not come back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think baseball's in danger of that. But yeah, I mean, if nobody thinks about that sort of stuff, because I don't think they do. I think they think about it in terms of their competitive cycles.
I feel as though there needs to be a church and state situation within the front office of any professional sports team, which is let the baseball people make baseball decisions as best they can understand, but also having the sort of, this is a product that we're selling to the public in good faith, hopefully, inform some of those decisions. Where if you're the Orioles, for example, it's like, what's the harm in signing Adam Jones to play for us for one more year? There is no harm in that because it's a fan favorite that you can bring back and make the team marginally better. The Orioles, with no prospects of which to speak, are running Dwight Smith out there every day because they need someone to be decent, and he can do that. If anything, and maybe if Adam Jones doesn't want to sign that deal because he doesn't want to get traded in the middle of the season. Of course, he used his no trade clause last year, for example. But anyway, this is another kind of greater philosophical
debate. As
we've done too often. So let's move on to the Randall Grichuk extension, which followed the Kevin Pillar news not long after that. Randall Grichuk signed a 5-year and $52 million contract extension with the Toronto Blue Jays, a deal that he kind of confessed was in the works for a few weeks. They had been having talks and conversations. It's not a lot of money. It's not a lot of money, and you still get sticker shock when if you're a sports fan, you're like, whoa, $52 million is a lot of money. But then you look at the way that contract is structured, where Randall Grichuk has, like, voluntarily signed up to make less than $10 million 3 years in a row in the last 3 years of the deal. And I can only help to think, like, wow, that is not a lot of baseball money.
It really isn't. And, I mean, free agency is just so, like, irreparably destroyed that it's going to be hard for that.
Baseball is rational. Baseball agency is very rational now.
But it's like they have so much money coming off the books. I mean, I know they obviously have to pay guys in arbitration, pre-arb guys, like, down the line. But, like, next year I think it's down to, like, $18 million. And then it's like, $9 million the year after that. And then $4 million, and then $0, which is sort of the end of the Tulo and Russell Martin contracts. You know, they had a $160 million payroll, like, yesterday, like, not that long ago.
With the Pillar trade, they've almost reached that equilibrium between paying for the active roster and paying for guys to be somewhere else. So dare to dream. It's all out there. If they trade Justin Smoke, we might just see it.
But here, I mean, but like they have so much money that they could spend theoretically, and you're starting to see the less and less, like, where they're going to spend it on. So yeah, if they, you know, I said to somebody on Twitter who was kind of disappointed in the deal, I'm like, you know, if you believe in the changes that he made last year and think that that's a real thing, it probably looks like it could be a good deal. Or he doesn't even have to be that good. He can, you know, just be a little better than he's been as his, you know, on his career average wise, not batting average, but just, you know, across the board. And if you don't think he's going to be that, then it's probably a little disappointing, but it's like not that much of an overreach. I mean, it's a guy who can play center field for now for a couple more years or at least another year probably. And just not that much baseball money for a team that it's not going to stop them from being able to do anything.
It is a shockingly little amount of baseball money is what it is. They're paying him to be basically a below average player.
But yeah.
That is, if you look at it and you use that sort of, you know, win versus, or the dollar versus production sort of, on a dollar versus production basis, they're paying him to be a below average player in almost every conceivable way, which is, you know, I saw somebody being like, oh, the back end of that contract's probably not going to be too pretty. Like, will he even be a regular still? And it's like, does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, the Blue Jays can
they just ate, ate Kendrys Morales' contract. They just ate Russell Martin's contract. Like, yeah, it's not a big deal.
And he's a young enough guy, and he has shown himself to he is who he is. He's not going to suddenly run like a 15% walk rate and with a 380 on base. I mean, he's going to be
he's an average player getting paid like a slightly below average player.
Yeah, he is a player who has traded the guaranteed dollars and longer term security for getting less than he theoretically could get in a truly rational market that is, I can't think of the word, but he has made that exchange, which is fun. You're seeing it over and over again because the owners won. Like, there's no disputing that now. When Ronald Acuna signs that, the deal that he signed, like,
Jesus,
they would rather do anything but go to the free market.
Hard to blame them. Hard to blame them. I mean, this has been a thing for, I don't know, I remember talking about this for years about, like, about how the Blue Jays should be able to use their money to, you know, make guys offers that they can't refuse. And they've just sort of, the teams have systematically been tighter and tighter and tighter at the margins of stuff like that, and have not, you know, have stopped doing it. And yeah, it's bizarre, and it you feel like it's bad and wrong for the sport, and that the money might not be there for somebody who is that good, but they're obviously, you know, terrified of going to free agency because it's just it's too big a risk. And Grichuk, you know, in his own little way, kind of fits into that. I mean, if a deal makes financial sense for him, then he's going to do it. And I think that's been a topic for a long time, you know, mm-hmm. among us and people. And for a long time, it's kind of been like, oh, well, why aren't these guys signing deals that, like, you know, I'd sign a $20 million deal and not, you know, risk, you know, if Josh Donaldson, you know, I would sign, you know, $150 million deal and not risk going into free agency, even though there's a chance I could get $300 million, which I believe he didn't. You know, that's always sort of felt to a normal person who can hardly comprehend the baseball economy, that seems to have always made sense. Like now they've ruined free agency so much that it's finally starting to make sense to players too.
Well, and there's an aspect of it that I saw some people discussing, which is because of the nature of the way that all these things have gone for so long, we've kind of become conditioned to, like, the, you know, there's been a movement. It's okay. Like, Albert Pujols earned that money, right? Albert Pujols earned the money that he's making now in the early stage of his career. But the fact that he's out there looking like so bad, so bad, and earning a lot of money, if there's less of that in the game at some point, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You want the guys to get what they earn and be paid for how they produce. And if there's any way to shift that to earlier in their career when they are more productive and have their pay be more reflective of what it is that they are earning in the moment, that's not a bad thing. But the system is right now tilted so far where even if you are, Acuña is so young and so great, and he's going to be earning more than he would have had he waited or tried to wander through the arbitration weeds, he's still obviously significantly overproducing for his contract. But it's definitely something that's easier to stomach. And we've been trying to bring this a fan-centered mindset, I think, to this show, and not just been ghoulishly, regurgitating front office speak.
Well, yeah, but recently, yeah.
Recently, yeah. Don't go back to the archives if you're worried about that. But I think that, again, maybe a move away from dead money, or guys being truly dead money, but under the previous wink and nudge, I'm going to rob you in the beginning, you'll rob me in the end. But maybe a move away from that isn't the worst thing for the game.
Well,
but
and
at
also
the same time, it's not a bad thing. Albert Pujols making that much money, Robinson Cano making that much money, Miguel Cabrera looking fully washed, making that much money. At no point is that a bad thing for the game.
No,
just
and
the fact
that
some fans might be uncomfortable with it isn't necessarily a reflection of the state of the game.
And I think what some of these extensions reflect is not necessarily that, you say, oh, people are afraid of free agency. I believe I just said it. But it's these guys not, the money, there's the percentage of revenues that go back into the players will it may go lower. It may, we don't know. But at some point, there's going to be a market correction, and it's probably going to be around when that CBA is. And the extensions that we've seen are guys who seem to probably understand that when they come up for air after that CBA has changed, if the market has changed, then they will have already been sold out as 31-year-olds, as 29, 30-year-olds, 32-year-olds, after whatever changes have to happen. I hope that made a little bit of sense. If you're Ronald Acuña, it does seem like an absurd amount of money to take, but he's obviously mitigating it. There's risk that he wouldn't make anywhere like that, but there's also risk that, in the coming years, they are going to fix the economic structure of the game so that younger guys do get paid more. And he's sort of part of the last cohort where that's not the case. So he might as well get his, because he's probably not going to get it, when he's 30 years old either.
I don't think it's unfair, but I definitely, the last word on this is that the Mike, all of the work that, all of the stuff that has been going on, all of the suppression of pay, whatever, however you want to look at it, that Mike Trout signed that deal that he signed, is all the owners are probably popping champagne bottles because of that. the ultimate, they've won, right? There's that deal in terms of just, it's a huge amount of money, but, and it could all go away tomorrow, but whatever, but that is what they've been striving for all along, I really think, is to get someone to leave so much money on the table. They've won. Now, enough. Nobody wants to hear us talk about this anymore. So whatever time this is of the show, this is what part people can skip to, because we could talk about the team now in 2019 on the field. They've played a week worth of games, and guess what? They can't fucking hit. None of them. They're trash. They get no hit for the first two times through the order. The third time of the order penalty when you play the Blue Jays is finally you will allow a hit. Other than when Randall Gritchick get two home runs the day that he signed his contract, which is a nice thing to do. Good way to keep your name at the front of the mind. But the offense is not looking great. I have my theories, but I'm going to float one to you.
Okay.
Why the team is not hitting? They don't have very many good players.
That's probably the biggest reason, I'm going to say. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's only been a week, so it's not like we can look at, in a statistical way, Danny Jansen is going to be fine, right? Danny Jansen hasn't hit at all. He'll be fine. Brandon Drury had some nice at-bats and hit some, looks pretty spry out there. Brandon Drury, if he plays well, it's going to be a problem because is he really going to move? He doesn't look like a second baseman to me. He does not. There's no second base vibe coming off of him whatsoever.
I've heard he's okay at second base, but yeah, I'll be curious to see more of it.
He just looks like a third baseman. You kind of play it, you know, game sort of suits it. But,
here's the thing. Here's a question that I had as you were talking about how bad the Blue Jays are. How many members of the Blue Jays 25-man roster would be on the Astros 25-man roster?
Well,
it's the number is low.
like Randall Grichuk isn't a starting player on the Astros in particular.
Right.
Probably.
Nor is Teoscar Hernandez or Billy McKinney.
Teoscar Hernandez, I don't know about that. I think maybe he could crack the Astros roster.
Yeah, you know, well, that is actually true. They may regret that a little
recent
bit.
Recent history notwithstanding. No, but that's a fair point. Now, that's how you are a bad team. And that is the – so I think that – sorry, what am I trying to say? The old first division, second division sort of scout designation. The Blue Jays right now are a second division team full of second division players and worse. There are some guys on the team who are being evaluated or who have been given opportunities who are definitely in a need to demonstrate that they are in fact second division players. They need to show that they can be good. They can play on a bad team. Mm. Those are the true quad A guys, the sort of up and down. But there are a few of those guys. Like, you know, Justin Smoke isn't necessarily a second division guy, but he's a more than competent everyday baseball player. He could play on most teams. Justin Smoke could walk on and play on the Red Sox today, I think, because of his position.
Steve Pierce isn't great. Yeah.
Well, he got paid though. and the Red Sox have, you know, or the Yankees, for example, have holes at first base. But
that's, I heard they have one at shortstop also.
All around the diamond, third base. Future Yankee Chris Bryant, by the way. Future Yankee Brandon Drury, there you go. Yeah, they're all out of guys they can wait for to pay, so they're going to have to look for ones they can trade for. But, the offense just doesn't look good because there's got a few, you know, guys who will be fine, guys who are what they are, who are in or around league average hitters. You know, Drury maybe hopefully could be more than that. Davey Jansen, Smoke, Hernandez, Grichuk, and whoever else. Those are like the league average-ish guys that you're hoping for. But then there's the other ones who are worse, right? The other players, Galvis is never going to be a league average hitter. He looks like the best hitter of the bunch right now. Okay. Drawing walks, hitting line drives, breaking up no hitters. And then there's the Gurriel thing, which is I've been trying to like dance around a little bit. He looks fucking awful.
It has been really bad, yeah. Yeah. One wonders how long he lasts. I mean, when Vlad comes up, isn't he... I mean, I guess they have Alan Hansen on the roster right now. But no, like, Gurriel seems like a guy who could maybe use some time at AAA. Where are you playing him? Because you have Biggio and Bichette there.
It was smart of them to schedule Gurriel's bobblehead on April 28th. Maybe they could have just shaved the two off of there somehow and like see if they can maybe move it up a little bit more. I'm wary of the fact they might not get there.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But, you know, as we learned from the who was the reliever with the barbecue apron from Syracuse? What was his name? This is ridiculous. We should know the name of this man. Jason Grilley.
Oh, yeah.
As we learned from that episode, they will let the marketing department make roster decisions and keep him around until the 28th, and then he'll go down on the 29th.
Blue Jays fever. Catch it. There are now, so we've talked about the negatives, which is the offense, which looks rough. They almost got no hit by the Indians and by Cleveland, sorry, and Trevor Bauer tonight. Bauer, who looks pretty good, and whatever, fuck him. But, the pitching staff, on the other hand, is pretty encouraging. Matt Shoemaker looking awesome. Mark Stroman looking awesome. Aaron Sanchez looking very good, in fact. I will happily eat those words, the many, many, many that I've used to drag him. Trent Thornton looking nice in his big league debut.
Oh, he was great, yeah.
The bullpen, Ken Giles is a fucking monster. Unbelievably unhittable. How'd they get that guy anyway?
For some scumbag, it doesn't even matter. It's great. But yeah, no, Giles is great.
Ken Giles has been really good, and it's really interesting to watch him pitch. And I was really noticing it in a couple of his outings. He basically pitches backwards. Like, this is the state of baseball right now. Ken Giles is a two-pitch guy. He's a little slider and a fastball. He throws 98 miles an hour, and this year he's thrown more sliders than fastballs. Or you would ordinarily think, like, wow, you throw that hard, just throw it every time. They're not going to really hit it. But now he pitches off the slider, and you're afraid of the fastball looming in the background, where it's like 2-1, and he's throwing you a slider. And then if you're the batter, it's like, well, what am I supposed to do with that? And now it's 2-2, and it's like, oh, well, now he'll throw the 98-mile-an-hour fastball at the letters that I'll be unable to miss or to lay off of, or the slider. It's been really good, and it's nice to see him pitching well, and obviously there's like that weird save situation, non-save situation thing that hopefully you will have shaken, given, you know, the random variation of the universe. But I'm not usually one to like lobby for trades, but he's definitely the guy that is the most value, who could and should be traded. Given the right package as the season wears on.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct, yeah.
He's also a maniac.
well, yes.
Which doesn't makes it easier to kind of run him out of town. But the only one I think that people are like Daniel Hudson, not winning a lot of fans in the early going. Never,
not so much.
Never give up a home run on opening day. It'll haunt you for your entire tenure.
The old Sergio Santos syndrome. Poor Sergio. So I don't know if did he give up a home run? I don't know. He gave up like, you know, he's a little hittable, as I recall, that time.
He was the closer. How wild is that to go back and think about those days? To me, the most encouraging thing is Stroman in particular. Looking like a prime extension candidate all the while.
Mm-hmm.
Extend him, you cowards. Stroman got to be hearing those footsteps. You know, as an old man going into free agency, get that money, get it, and sign it. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts watching this team in the early going? Is there anything that jumps out to you? The defense looks better because it couldn't be worse.
Basically, yeah. I mean, Teoscar's got the glasses, which are not prescription apparently, but they're tinted to help his eyes. Not have such a contrast with the lights, apparently. I don't know. What stands out is that it's nice that, like, there's just no stakes, right? I mean, that people aren't just shitting their fucking diapers every time they lose. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're gonna watch a baseball game for the sake of watching a baseball game, and it doesn't matter, and we all know and agree. And that's why, like, 15 people show up. Because that's the number of people that are basically entertained by shit like that. But, I don't know. The pitching's been real nice. I think the hitting's been garbage. That's my deep analysis. And I assume neither will quite go on the same way.
It'll be more fun later in the year, fingers crossed, when the stakes are the same, but there is, like, Vlad and hopefully Bo to watch along with it.
Yeah.
Where nice. That's something that you can invest in and invest in the at-bats and really kind of live and die with those pitches, because you would just want to see them do well. You want to see them hit. And like, that's the sort of thing that you're paying your money to see at that point.
Yeah. No, nobody's really like, you know, it'd be nice if Teoscar turned into something good, but nobody's like living and dying on his at-bats. Like, oh no, he might not be good. It's like, yeah, that's, everybody understands that that's a huge possibility. But with the Bows and the Vlads, there will be some skin in the game. Yeah.
One thing that I have been very excited by so far is the base running.
Oh, as you would. Yeah. Absolutely.
They're crazy. It's awesome. They are evoking memories of that. Those, woebegone, Padres teams that just ran for the sake of doing it. Sign me up. Give me all you got. Even if you are, you know, dead to rights, like Like poor, apparently Lourdes Gurriel. Poor Lourdes Gurriel can do nothing right this season. He can't field, he can't hit, and he keeps making outs on the bases. It's not a great time to be Lourdes, but I'm sure he'll come around. Right? Guys that never walk and always strike out, they have those things tend to work out in their favor in the end.
Javi Baez, yeah, that's what he's the poor man's.
Javi Baez is the only good player on the Cubs now. They're done. They're cooked. Every player, trade them all on the Cubs. Blow it up. Madden gone. Chris Bryant gone. Traded to the Yankees. But Javi Baez is the one that will stand tall.
Yeah, this is unorthodox, but here's what I think should happen. Is that Joe Madden and Mike Babcock should switch jobs.
My thing, I was joking about it with Brandon from The Score, who's like the baseball editor over there, yeah, was like that Joe Madden and Dave Martinez are both going to get fired. So they're going to go and manage in the Atlantic League with all their weird trick gimmick ratchet rules. And it's just going to be the two of them like playing jazz all day long. They're going to manage in the Atlantic League and just like switching pitchers to the catcher, and center fielder is going to come in to play like six infielders and five outfielders. Just the two of them just smelling their own farts in the Atlantic League for the rest of the summer. That's what I want to see. Mostly because I want to see them. Because my theory that I cooked up one day and now believe it to be true is that Dave Martinez is going to get fired from Washington. He's like way out of his depth and the team hates him and the fan base fucking loathes him. And the bullpen management is a bad fit. Like they cannot manage the bullpen, which is a bit of a dicey proposition given who's back there. Now, if you were a team owner and you had paid your own manager to go away, you already gave him a contract, now you've paid him to go not be the manager of the team. So you need a low-cost, kind of established baseball man who can manage a good bullpen. Can you think of anyone who might fit that description, Stone?
Yeah, I think I can think of one man, yeah.
One man, one hero. John Gibbons comes riding in to D.C.
Is he low cost, though? Because he's probably under contract this year, right? So
he's low cost. He's already getting paid. So be like, all right, here you go, Gibby. Come and finish the year. You've already got paid from the Jays. We'll give you a little bit more. And if everything goes well, then we'll talk for 2020.
Does it work that way?
Does it not?
I mean, I assumed that if he takes another job, then the Blue Jays will probably stop paying him.
Oh?
I never thought about it too much, to be honest with you. I want to see John Gibbons in that red fucking jacket walking out on Canadian Thanksgiving, giving the finger guns to whatever shitbags in that bullpen to just completely have things unravel like they always do for the Washington Nationals.
But I do also that I am excited by, but also excited for the world's reddest ass Max Scherzer to like explode on the mound, literally explode like into 1,000 pieces, blood, gore, viscera everywhere, because Max Scherzer has worked himself into such a frenzy, and John Gibbons like won't take the bait. Like he's trying to antagonize.
It's a good situation. Like, it's a good situation for him, though. It really is.
Calmer than you are, man.
I'd love to see it.
All right, I think that's about it for this edition of Birds All Day. We've already found John Gibbons a new job. I think that is noble work on which we can go out. So, of course, you can continue reading Inch Stone at The Athletic. And if, as Vlad grinds back to life, you will hopefully see another edition of the Vlad Religion, Vlad Guerrero newsletter in your inbox. And I got another video in the works, I think. So hopefully that will show up one day. Soon. What do you think? You got anything else to add?
No, that sounds right. Hopefully one of those videos does show up.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I shot some B-roll at a candy show on the weekend, so I need to go somewhere. So I went to a hardcore show. It was fun. But that's it. So for Andrew Stoughton, my name is Drew Fair Service. We will talk to you next time on Birds All Day.